The Biden administration is inheriting at least one thing around COVID-19 that's working: hospital data. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. On the first full day of his administration, President Biden signed an executive order designed to ensure a data-driven response to COVID-19 and future public health threats. Now, the administration already faces a big choice around COVID data. In July, the Trump administration directed hospitals to stop sending data to the Centers for Disease Control and instead send it to the Department of Health and Human Services. And HHS asked the data analysis company Palantir to harmonize this whole mess of information. At first, hot mess. But by the fall, the system was really working and now is tracking hospitalizations, at least, really, really well. Alexis Madrigal runs the COVID tracking project at The Atlantic. He says the Biden administration should try to ignore the messy politics in favor of the good data.
You know, part of it is CDC is seen as a less political organization versus HHS, in which, you know, it's seen as more a part of the administration and not sort of standing apart. You know, one of the things I really learned in this reporting is just that description is not totally accurate in all cases. Mm. You know, the people who built this new hospital data system, they're all career civil servants. Mm-hmm. And so it really takes getting pretty deep inside these agencies to really understand the dynamics within these, you know, very complex organizations.
So what choices does the Biden administration face around this data collection?
Right. They could try to push the data collection for hospitalizations back into CDC, into this sort of less flexible and older system, or they could keep it inside HHS. And so one of the things that I've been really worried about is that sort of to do this sort of abstract good of having the data collection be, you know, in the place where it belongs, mm-hmm. that you actually take away this system that's working really well right now and that's incredibly transparent for the public.
Do you have any sense from the 1 week administration has existed of which way they might go?
You know, I think the real thing is that the vaccine data is on fire.
Right.
You know, you saw CDC Director Walensky saying, you know, she wasn't sure about the vaccine data right now. And I just got to say, I mean, that was a system that was designed and built inside the CDC.
I mean, this is arguably the first major pandemic to exist in the big data age, right? Like, it sounds like you're saying there's just a skill set there that might not have been developed.
Yeah, and it's not as if the CDC doesn't collect data. Of course, the CDC collects tons of data,
right.
But it's kind of for different purposes. It's one thing to need rough and ready data to make decisions today. It's another thing to collect data for research projects over time in which you really want like precise answers, but you have a lot of time to develop those data sets and the questions you ask, the processes that you build. In the pandemic response, I would say my primary criticism of the CDC on a bunch of different levels is they've just moved too slowly. It hasn't seemed enough like a crisis. Hmm. You know, I mean, the early example of that for me was in the very early days when the CDC had put up their COVID tracking apparatus. They just didn't update it on the weekends at a time when cases were like doubling, you know, like they'd stop updating on Friday, they'd update on Monday, and there'd be twice as many cases as when they stopped, you know? And I just thought to myself, like, guys, everyone is working the weekend right now. Like, we need to know what's happening. The public needs to understand what's happening. You can't just take the weekend off, you know? And I'm happy to say that the vaccine tracking that the CDC is doing, they're updating it over the weekend. You know, it's like,
right.
So maybe this is a good sign, you know, that the Biden administration CDC maybe is reinvigorated and has some, you know, renewed sense of purpose and are treating this like the crisis that it really is.
Talk to me a little bit about Palantir and its role in this data collection, because Palantir is a name that inspires some dread, either in the book or with respect to privacy and transparency. Like, what do we know about its role in this data collection and how much transparency there is in what they can use this data for?
Mm-hmm. So Palantir, you know, was co-founded by Peter Thiel, who I think for a lot of Democrats has become sort of a Republican supervillain. And Peter Thiel and Palantir have a lot of government contracts. People are rightfully worried about the sort of extent of their reach into the federal government. But here's the thing. People used the fact that HHS's data system, which is called HHS Protect, was built by Palantir as a reason to move data out of HHS. The problem is that HHS Protect actually grew out of a CDC system also built by Palantir. Mm-hmm. Also NIH, they also use Palantir. So we have a system in which, you know, Palantir is pretty thoroughly threaded throughout our public health surveillance infrastructure, which in my mind, the way that I would set it up if I were doing this, probably not. On the other hand, it's not really an issue of HHS versus CDC. They both use Palantir.
Right.
Palantir says that they don't use that data that's flowing into the system they built for anything else, that they basically just built the database and their hands are off of it, for what it's worth.
Do you think we have that in writing somewhere in a federal contract that might be available for taxpayers to see?
Let's hope so.
Right. I want to ask you about all of this data and your data, because you can't, of course, track what you don't measure. Are you going to keep the COVID tracking project going? Do you think there's still a need for that?
I think eventually we'll stop data collection. And I think we'll continue to do a lot of the really deep research that's necessary to understand these metrics. Because, you know, I think there's really two pieces to what we do. One is, you know, we go state by state with this army of volunteers and paid staffers, and we collect all this data and we make sense of it into sort of national summary statistics and analysis. The other thing that we do, though, is we spend a lot of time reaching out to states, and we've probably had hundreds or even thousands of contacts with state officials at this time. We also work a lot with understanding the federal bureaucracy and data systems. And that work, I think, will continue long into the future, because we don't actually know what happened in many states, and we don't really know how well a lot of these data systems actually are working on the ground. And there's so much work left to be done there. All that said, the right place for this data collection and publication is the federal government. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a function of a functional state to do this. And I think eventually we shouldn't do it. that's just the, and we've said that from the first day of the project. And I think we're seeing some encouraging signs, and we have over the last few months, that the feds are really, really stepping up with the amount of data they're publishing, the quality of that data, and the transparency of the methods that are used to create that data.
I do want to go back to what you said about vaccine data being on fire. What is going on there? What are we missing?
Yeah. Well, we don't know precisely what the problems are with those vaccine data systems, but it strikes me that the most likely thing is that the lag time of understanding how many vaccines have been used, actually administered, is throwing off some of the complex, you know, sort of supposedly real-time logistics of getting more vaccines out. Hmm. And we probably, as Americans, rely too much on the idea of precise data, as opposed to building systems that are resilient to rough data. And I think that we actually have a lot to learn from some of the poorer countries of the world during this pandemic, where they just didn't expect to have perfect data, so they didn't build systems that were reliant on it. Mm-hmm. That means you need to build in other things, but it's doable. Like, you don't always need precise data in order to have effective public health response, as we see, for example, in Vietnam.
Alexis Madrigal runs the COVID Tracking Project at The Atlantic. Right now, the administration's executive order is asking for a review of data collecting procedures and, notably, asks the federal government to figure out how to make more COVID-19 data available to the public. And now for some related links. We've got a link to Madrigal's piece from The Atlantic about the HHS system, how it functions, and how it got to be working as well as it is. There's also a link to that executive order I mentioned, which, after talking with Alexis Madrigal, definitely seems to validate the idea that we're going to try to create perfect data systems to tackle our next big crisis, especially since, you know, creating data-driven responses to future public health threats is in the title of the order. But we are still at the information gathering stage, so I'll reserve judgment for now. And I should be clear that while the HHS data is doing a good job at tracking hospitalizations, we still don't actually have solid data around testing or even remotely enough testing. So we're not counting cases accurately. And despite the appalling death count, it's likely that it's too low, maybe by 100,000, according to the CDC. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ, and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.